Baruchim Abayim, ladies. We are studying Parashat Hayesara. Parashat Hayesara begins with the passing away of Sarah Imenu at the age of 127 years. Then the Torah tells us how Abraham Avinu came and eulogized his wife, and of course cried. I want to point out that if you look at the word that he cried, vilibkota, if you look in the Sefer Torah, the chaf of the word vilibkota is written small. And the rabbis wonder why would they have to write it small. So the classic answer that's given is because they're teaching us that Avraham Avinu did not cry that much. The great tzaddikim understand Hashem Natan v'Hashem Lakach Yishem Hashem Evorach. God gives, God takes. May the name of God be blessed. And therefore, of course, he misses his wife, and of course he feels bad, but at the end he knows that everything is for the best, so it's not just an endless crying. Even Avraham Avinu's crying was measured. There was a certain shi'ur, and not more than that. Hence the chaf is written small to tell us that Avraham, it was a crying of faith. But I heard from one of the Mefarshim that Halakha says that if somebody passes away right before a holiday, so the holiday breaks the Avilut. Ben Menan, for example, if somebody would pass away on Erev Sukkot, on the day right before Sukkot. So the Halakha says they go home from the funeral, they sit for an hour, and then that's it. The holiday comes, there's no more Avilut, they get up, and now they're not allowed to mourn anymore. So if you make the calculation, according to our tradition, Akedat Yitzhak was on Kippur. That's why we read the Akedah on Kippur in the Echare Rason. If you remember in Mincha time, we start the Mincha with Echare Rason, which is a song which depicts the entire Akedah. Now it took Avraham Avinu 3 days to get to the Akedah. So if it took him 3 days to get there, it probably took him 3 days to get back. So if the Akedah was on Kippur itself, so he comes back 11, 12, 13. And then he finds that Sarah is passed on, so he buries her on the 14th. Now the 14th of Tishri is Erev Sukkot. And therefore the Halakha says, once Sukkot comes, there is no Avilut. So therefore the Torah says, Vilibkota. The chaf is small because Avram was not allowed to cry for the normal 7 days because the holiday broke his Avilut. That's the Dirashah that they say. Then the Torah goes to great length to tell us how Avraham purchased a plot, a burial spot for his wife. He knew that the Ma'arat HaMachpelah was a very important real estate. How did he know that? When we read in last week's Parasha, when the guests came to visit Avraham, actually they were angels. So it says Avraham Avinu went to slaughter for them three sheep. In order to give them the tongue. It says Ve'ela Bakar Ratz Avraham. It says Avraham ran after the cattle. See, they were running. So the Hakamim tell us that one of the cattle was actually a malach. The malach came down in the form of a cattle, in the form of, let's say, a sheep or a goat, and it started to run. Avraham Avinu was running after it. Where did it run until? It ran to Hebron, to the place of the Ma'arat HaMachpelah, and over there he realized that this was the opening of Gan Eden. He saw this was the entrance of Gan Eden on earth. He smelt the fragrance. He saw Adam and Hava that were buried there. So at that point in his mind, he said, this is where I want to be buried as well. So Avraham Avinu knew the value of Ma'arat HaMachpelah. It wasn't a mistake that he just picked that property. He had his eye on that property from already when he was 100 years old, when he was 99 years old. At this time over there, Avraham Avinu was 137 years old. So already 38 years before, Avraham Avinu already recognized the value of the Ma'arat HaMachpelah. So he's going to buy it from Ephron, and the Torah tells us to hold back and forth. The negotiations of the deal, originally they tell him, take it for free. And Avraham says, no, I want to pay for it. And then they end up charging him an exorbitant amount of money, 400 shekel kesef, for a plot of land that really wasn't worth that much. But Avraham Avinu's generous, he pays the price. And Hachamim have a great argument over here. There's a great machloket between the Rishonim, between the Rambam, and the Rabbeinu Yonah. According to everybody, Avraham was tested 10 times. There's no argument on that. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avot, Asara nisyonot nisa kadosh baruch hu et Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was tested by God 10 times and he passed them all. The machloket is, what were the 10 tests? So every rabbi has a different tally of the 10 nisyonot of Avraham Avinu. For example, some rabbis say one of the tests was when he didn't want to worship Avodah Zarah and Nimrod took him and threw him into the fire. That was a test. Another person would have said, you know what, I'll worship Avodah Zarah, don't throw me in the fire, I don't want to die. Avraham Avinu was willing to die not to worship Avodah Zarah, he passed the test. Others say another test was when God told him, Lech Lecha, right, go down to a land that I will show you. He gets down to the land of Canaan, there's a famine. That was another test. Sarah is abducted twice. That's another test. And they list, each one was another challenge to Avraham Avinu. Everybody agrees Akedat Yitzhak was a test to Avraham Avinu. We all agree that. In our opinion, that might have been the greatest test. And actually, according to Harambam, that was the 10th and final test. The last test was when God tells Avraham, God says, now I know you are God-fearing, you did it, Hazak Baruch, Mishab Berach, you went 10 for 10, you are a tzaddik, Avraham. And after that, there's no more tests. Rabbeinu Yonah says, no, there was one more test after the Akedah. And that's the test of this week's Perasha. What's the test? He says the test is that after Sarah died, he was looking for a burial spot. God had promised Avraham Avinu the land of Israel. So technically the whole land belonged to Abraham. And now he was having a hard time negotiating with these people to sell him a piece of land that really belongs to him in the first place. And the greatness of Avraham Avinu was, he did not question, he did not second guess God. So therefore this was indeed the 10th test of Avraham. Which means Avraham could have thought in his mind, listen, you promised me the land, my wife is in front of me over here, so Borei Olam, what are you doing this to me over here for? Why are you making it so difficult for me? After all, Avraham was preaching his whole life, God is El Nachum V'Hanun, Tovu Metiv, God is good, God is kind, God is generous, God is benevolent, God only does good. And now, God is not making it so easy for Avraham to bury his wife. Avraham can have a thought in his mind and say, Borei Olam, what are you doing to me? I just came back from the Akedah, my wife is in front of me, why are you making it so difficult for me to purchase a piece of land that you promised for me? If you're so kind and generous and good, let it go easy. That didn't even enter Avraham Avinu's mind. Avraham Avinu never looked at what God did to him as if he's getting shortchanged, or if he's getting cheated, or if he's getting a bad deal. In Avraham Avinu's mind, whatever God did to him at any time was letovah, was for the best, and that's a great thing. Which means it didn't even enter his mind. I don't know how it's possible. Human being, it enters your mind even for a second. Why is this happening to me? Didn't enter his mind. In Avraham Avinu's mind, everything was going perfectly. Everything was going smooth. Everything was going as planned. Lo hidher acharai. That was the 10th test. He didn't second guess or question why these things were happening to him. Even though God is so merciful, why wasn't God being merciful to Avraham Avinu in the time of his crisis? He didn't think about that. And you know what the proof is? After he bought the Ma'arat HaMachpelah from Ephron, it says, Vayishtahu lifnei am ha'aris. It says he bowed down in front of them. What does it mean he bowed down in front of them? Avraham Avinu wasn't Chinese. What is he bowing down in front of lifnei am ha'aris, in front of the Bnei Chet? So the Gemara explains he was bowing down in front of God that was in front of Bnei Chet. Which means Avraham Avinu always, wherever he stands, God is in front of him. So it says, Vayishtahu, he bowed lifnei am ha'aris, in front of the one that was in front of the Amaris. Who's that? God. What did he bow down to God for? He bowed down to God and said, thank you, Borei Olam, for giving me the zechut to purchase the Ma'arat HaMakpelah. Which means he had no claims. On the contrary, Avraham Avinu felt fortunate. Avraham Avinu, in his mind, he felt nothing was coming to him. God doesn't owe me anything. Even though he promised me the land, maybe it means in the future. Maybe it means in the times of Yeshua ben Nun. Who says it means this moment? Even though my wife is in front of me and I have to bury her and it's not going so easy? Well, what, God owes me to do me favors like this? On the contrary, whatever is God doing for me at this moment, it's for the best. Therefore, once the deal was consummated, what does Avraham Avinu say? Thank you, Borei Olam, I appreciate it. What would we have said? Imagine if a person is trying to buy a house. And he's trying to buy a house, and he's going with the real estate, and he finally signs it, and the real estate comes back to him and says, no, somebody else wants it, somebody else is looking at it, the price changed, they want more money. So now you come and say, well, what are you doing to me over here? I want to buy a house for my family, I'm not doing an avon, I'm doing a mitzvah over here. I want to put mizuzot up, I want to have chinuch habayit, I want to do things l'shem shamayim. Now you're making it difficult for me? And after a while, the real estate comes back to you and says, okay, it's yours. Okay, you're happy again. All of a sudden, they come back. Oh, something else happened. No, there's a lien on the house. You can't have it. Oh, it's Borei Olam. Leave it. It's okay. So what's happening over here? What's happening over here? He's going crazy, the guy. Finally, after a whole back and forth, he finally signs the contract, and it's his. Now, there's this guy. He says, thank you, Borei Olam. But what in his mind, what is he thinking? Thank you, Borei Olam. You couldn't make it easy. My friend bought a house. He bought it in 1 minute. He went down the block. He told him, I want it. They signed the deal. They shook hands and finished. Why did you have to bring me all around and upside down and turn me over? So, of course, it's thank you, but it has a little bitterness. Thank you, but you're not so happy. It couldn't, you say, God, it could have been a little easier next time. The greatness of Avraham Avinu was when it says, Vayishtahu lifnei ha-ma'aris, the Torah is telling you he had no question in his mind, which I don't know how that's humanly possible. That's why he's Avraham Avinu. Which means he could have so many claims. God, I'm the Sadiq over here. I just did the Akedat Yitzhak. His wife, Sadiqit, she needs to be buried in the land that you promised him. The least you can do for Avraham Avinu, God, is let him just go, get a spot, make it easy. Instead, he has to negotiate with these Rasha'im. These people that he was buying the Ma'arat HaMakpelah from were far from Sadiqim. They were crooks. They were taking advantage of Avraham Avinu. And still, Avraham Avinu says, I love God, I have no questions on God, and I thank you, Borei Olam, without any doubt. The Ben Yonah says, that was the 10th and final test. But my question is as follows. My question is as follows. It sounds like every test brought Avraham Avinu to a higher level. What do you want, ladies? What do you see over there? A bug? Okay, a bug. You have to know. If you see a mouse, then say something. But a bug is okay. A bug is okay. We don't see more than bugs. There's nothing to worry about. There's no mice over here. There's no mice over here. I'm saying, if you see a mouse, then you have to worry. A bug, you have to worry about. You're bigger than the bug. Don't worry. You're bigger than the bug. Okay, ladies, Betul Torah. Come back to the subject. Betul Torah. Test. Okay, everything's a test. The question they ask is like this. What was greater, at least in your mind, Akedat Yitzhak, or this test of bearing Sarah? What was greater? What was greater, ladies? Pay attention. The burial of Sarah, or Akedat Yitzhak? Now, I would say, without thinking anything, Akedat Yitzhak, obviously, to go slaughter your son, to put him on a mizbeach, the paternal instincts, to go sacrifice your legacy, your future. Alright, now I'm not saying that the test of buying a burial spot for Sarah wasn't easy, but it's nothing compared to Akedat Yitzhak, was much more difficult. But Rabbeinu Yonah says no. The test of the purchase of the plot was greater than Akedat Yitzhak. That was the 10th test. Which means at the 9th, Avraham wasn't perfect yet. When did he become perfect and great? Only after this. And I ask you, what makes this test so great? It seems that in level, it was not as great as Akedat Yitzchak. So the explanation is the rabbis say something unbelievable over here. Now they explain it like this. By Akedat Yitzchak and all the other tests, Avraham knew he was being tested. He was warned. God told him, Avraham, this is a test. Kach na et bincha, et yachidecha, or he tells him, lech lecha, which means, when you have a warning, when you know you're being tested, so then already you rise to the occasion, so now already you're able to get the strength and the courage and the motivation to succeed. Because you know, this is it. Everybody's watching me. Everybody's monitoring what I'm doing over here. I heard the prophecy. So therefore, when it's pre-told to you, it becomes not easy, but it becomes easier. Because you know already, this is it. This is a serious thing. God did not forewarn Avraham that Sarah's going to die, or that he has to go by a plot. This was considered already daily living. This was considered just another everyday thing. He came home from the Akedah, and now he doesn't know he's being tested. He doesn't know the cameras are on him. He doesn't know that the Torah is going to write down everything that takes place over here. In the Akedah, he knew if he passes, it's going to be written in this book forever. He knew if he passed the test, Klal Yisrael is going to be talking about it for the next 3,000 years. But this over here, this was a regular man coming home. He has a crisis. People have crisis every day. What, does God come to you before the crisis? Listen, I'm telling you now, today you're going to have a crisis. Make sure you don't lose your cool. Make sure you don't lose your temper. No, if he would, we would be ready. If God would tell us before each test, listen, today you're going to get to your car, there's going to be a flat tire. I'm warning you. But don't get angry. They say, oh, now I'm ready. Now, even though it's a test, because when you get there and it's freezing cold and you have to go somewhere and you see the flat tire, God warned me, oh, be careful, control yourself. But let's say you're just walking to your car and you weren't prepared for it and you see, now you don't know God's testing you. But He is. But He didn't warn you. So it becomes much harder to elevate yourself to the level. That was the greatness of Avraham Avi. His goodness was natural. You understand? His goodness was automatic. It wasn't only a show when he needed to become great. He was great at all times, even when he just thought it was natural and normal experience and normal living. And it even gets worse than this, the test, or much serious more than the test. How? You have to remember the pressure that Avraham Avinu was under. Avraham Avinu just almost sacrificed his son. He is now coming back and he sees his wife dead in front of him. The Akedah Avraham Avinu was on high. He just passed the biggest test of his career. You know how excited he must have been after the Akedah? He's on the top of the mountain. He comes back, he sees his wife dead. What does that do to Avraham? Boom, roller coaster. It brings him from the top to the bottom. Who did that? The Satan did that. The Satan tried to make Avraham Avinu lose his balance, or lose his peace of mind, or to lose his stability. In order that what? That he might become a little upset. And once you become upset or depressed, you start to do a lot of things that you don't normally do. Under normal, serene, tranquil times, everybody acts normal, everybody's happy, everybody's courteous. Good morning, good evening, how do you do? Can I help you? Can I give you a lift? But if things are not going right, everybody now has an excuse not to be decent anymore. In America, we have a very, very good excuse always when we're not polite to each other. We say, forgive me, I'm having a bad day. So a bad day already gives us an excuse to forget about anything that's written in the book. Bad day, we're patur, finished. We don't have to act in a Torah way. The greatness of Avraham was, no matter how emotional swing here, I mean, he was on top, all of a sudden he crashes to the bottom when he sees his wife. The greatness of the tzaddikim was, they always went straight. The situations never affected them. They controlled the situations. They never let life control them, which is an amazing thing. Avraham Avinu now, still negotiates with Ephron with impeccable honesty. I'll give you one example. One of the things it says, he paid Ephron in coins. 400 shekel. Shekel's a coin. I want to tell you something. It's much harder to pay in coins. In the olden days, most people did not pay in coins. They used to pay in gold. You take a piece of gold, bullion, and you give it to the goy. Halakha says, if you're buying something from a goy, the rabbis made a takkah. Now you shouldn't pay in gold. Why? Because you're worried the goy might melt the gold down into Avodah Zarah, and you cause them now to worship Avodah Zarah. Now, Avraham Avinu, his wife is in front of him. He's worried now, gold, coins, just buy it. Buy the item before they change their mind. Avraham tells him, wait. I have to go to the bank and get coins. Because halakha says it has to be shekel kesef. Which means he kept the law to the detail under all situations. If we were, let's say, outside, and it's cold day, and we're freezing, so now we want to have a hot chocolate. So, okay, we'll look at it. There's no kashrut on it, but okay, we'll come in it anyway. We'll eat it. What happened over here? Because the circumstance causes us to compromise. Oh, we didn't eat the whole day and we're away on business. There's no kosher place. We'll eat it. We'll come in it anyway. Because to us, the situation always controls us. The greatness of the Siddiqim was they were consistent. No matter what was happening, the halakha always was kept. They never gave an excuse, had a bad day, or have anxiety, or had pressure. Joe, the Gemara says, you want to judge a person, you can judge him in three places. Bikiso, bikoso, bikaso. What does that mean? Kiso is his pocket. Which means everybody has anxiety in their pocket. Before you touch his pocket, he's decent, he's kind, he's derech eretz. Touch his pocket and you get electrocuted. All of a sudden, hey, my money, who do you think you are? And it goes crazy. Why? Because that's a pressure point over here. The pocket is a pressure point. Because so, give him something to drink. Now already you start to see what the real person is. And kaso. Kaso means when he gets angry. Which means, basically the Gemara is trying to tell you, you can't tell who a person is when he's under the normal level of life. A person must be tested when things are not going so well. Then already you see who he is. There was a great rabbi called Rav Chaim Brisker. Rav Chaim Brisker, to show you the Hachamim, they never lost their equilibrium. They never lost their level. He was once getting off a carriage, I guess of horses, and he fell. And it was a serious fall. He fell on his face. The students ran to him. And the rabbi right away said, move away. No one touch me. No one touch me. The Brisker, the Chaim Brisker says, no one touch him. They're scared of the rabbi. No one touched him. But he's lying on his face for a significant amount of time. They're worried. After that, the rabbi gets himself. He lifts himself up. He walks inside. He's cut. He's bruised. So they tell him, Chacham, what was that all about? We came to help you. We came to lift you up. How come you didn't let us? He says, when I fell, I must have fainted for a few seconds. And when I regained consciousness, I didn't know how bad I was. He says, I didn't know if I had one more minute to live even. He says, I thought I was a goses. A goses means somebody that's on his last breath. And the halakha says, you're not allowed to touch somebody that's on his last breath. Why? Because by touching him, you might cause him to die faster than he should. So look at this. Sort of Chaim Brisker, he's on the floor, bruised, all banged up. And what is he thinking on his mind? Halakha. Don't touch me. Why? Because halakha, you can't touch a ghost. Who's thinking about halakha? Ghost says. That's when, God forbid, somebody falls and cuts themselves. They're thinking right away about the Shohan Aruch. That was the greatness. Hachamim was so in tune with God at all moments. There was another rabbi called Rav Natan Zvi Finkel. He was Rosh Yeshiva of Slobodka Yeshiva in Europe. Lo Alechem, he lost a child on Chol HaMoed Sukkot. Lo Alechem. So of course the halakha says he had to bury his child on the holiday. On the way to the funeral, he's talking to his students. And what's the conversation? He was analyzing, are you allowed to cry on Chol HaMoed Sukkot? Chol HaMoed is holiday. Zman Simcha. So he's debating. Can I, can't I? What's the deen? And he concludes, you can't. So he's walking at his son's funeral with a composure, seriousness of course, but he's controlling himself from crying. And they bury the child. For the rest of the holiday of Sukkot, no emotion. Simchat Torah, dancing with the Sefer, Hakafot, no emotion. After the holiday is over, they make Havdalah. Baruch Ata Hashem, Hamavdil ben Kodesh Lechol, the rabbi lets out a scream, and he breaks down to the floor and he starts crying. This was the control. The control, the halakha, when the achamim were faced with situations of difficulty, even personal tragedy, they never let that be an excuse not to break the law between man and God, and not to break the law between man and man. Which means they still kept the same courtesy. Rav Shlomo Zalman Oyebach, Zichrono Lebracha, was once in the hospital, and he saw one of his talmidim. His talmidim was walking in the hall. Rav Shlomo Zalman, a few moments before, received word that his wife, who was in the hospital, just had passed away. Rav Shlomo Zalman just became an onen. He sees one of his students walking in the hospital. So Rav Shlomo Zalman says, what are you doing in the hospital? He says, Hakam, my wife just had a baby boy. Hakam starts smiling, Mabruk, Besiman Tov, and he hugs him, and he tells him, Mezat Hashem, the baby will be Nimod, B'Sha'at Tova Muslachat, Keshem Sheikhanes Lemila, Kach Yikhanes Tuna Chobam, Asim Tovi, giving him all different berakot, truly happy. So after the student walks away, the students go to Rav Shlomo Zalman, Oyebach, Hakam, you just lost your wife. What are you getting all excited? He says, that's not his problem. He said, this is my issue over here. I have to now make him upset. He just had a baby boy. Now, again, a lesser person would say, leave me alone now. Okay, not now. But the greatness of the Hakamim was they acted one way always. There was never two ways. It was always the same derech under all circumstances, even when they didn't think they were doing something so great. Our rabbis tell us that in the yeshiva, when they wanted to see who a student is, they wanted to see his midot, they wanted to see his character. Where did they test the student? So the Hakamim always would say they would never test him in the Beit Midrash. The Beit Midrash is the last place to test him. He has a book in front of him, a Gemara. He has a Havruta sitting in front of him. All the rabbis are there. Everybody's on good behavior in the Beit Midrash. So where would the rabbis go to test the students? In the lunchroom. Now in the lunchroom, now you see who the person is. Now there's no Rashba in front of him. There's no Tosafot in front of him. Now all he has in front of him is a piece of chicken. And he's hungry. And now there's a line of people, and he's looking in the pot, and there's only a few more pieces of chicken left, and he's hungry, he has to get one. Now they watch him. What is he going to do? He's going to push, he's going to grab, or how is he going to eat, or how is he going to... That's already where the test of a person is. In the small things in life. Means we're always worried about the big things. We only do the dramatic. We think that if we pass the dramatic tests in life, then already we're great. The greatness of this last test was small things, honest. I'm sure Akedat Yitzhak makes the newspapers, no question. Buying a plot from Ephron, being honest when he bought it, it's a business transaction, real estate deal, nothing earth-shattering. But the Torah says that's the greatness of Avraham. He wasn't only great at the dramatic nisyonot, but even at the small things, the everyday things of life, he also rose to the occasion. And you know what? Right after this parasha, Avraham sends Eliezer to go find the wife for Yitzhak. He says, I have one request. Go make sure you take her from my family. And he gives them the place where to go, in Haran over there. And make sure that she's Baalat Chesed, of course. She has to be, you know, our style. She's generous, she's kind, and all that. Eliezer gets to the well. Now again, listen to what you're doing here. You're looking for the next mother of Israel. Not a small thing. This is not just a regular shidduch over here. You're looking for the mother of Yaakov Avinu. You're looking for the greatest person in history. If it was me, you know how I would do it? First you go to the well, you interview. It's not a small thing. You have to ask questions. And the answer should have came with a paper of 30 questions. Come here, what's your name? What's your father's name? What's your mother's name? Tell me about you. Where do you pray? What do you do? What's your goals? What's your value? You have to interview him. It's not a joke. If we make a mistake with this, then you're affecting Klal Yisrael. What does Eliezer do? He stands at the well. No tests, no interviews, no papers. He's watching. Some girl comes up to him, sir, you look thirsty. Can I give you a drink? Eliezer says, this is very good. Sir, these are your camels? Yeah. Can I give you camels to drink as well? Eliezer, this is very good over here. This is the lady. How's he so certain? The answer is very simple. Because when you're tested, then already everybody knows the right answers. Of course, ask a girl, what do you do? Oh, chesed, very important. If somebody comes and asks for a glass of water, of course, him and his camels. Of course, Hagi Balash, when you're asking a question, you can answer anything you want because you're trying to impress. The greatness of Rivka was, she didn't know who Eliezer was. Did she know Eliezer was a shadchan? Did she know Eliezer was video camering her? Did she know that everything she was doing now is going to affect that she's going to marry Yitzhak? She was just doing what she knows how to do every day. She was doing what she did the day before and what she would have done the next day. She didn't think she was doing anything special. Which means, if Eliezer didn't stop her after that, she would have went home. Her father would have said, what happened today? They've got the well. She would have said, nothing. I went to the well, regular day. I gave some water to somebody. Meaning it was normal. And that's where you're able to tell who the person is. Under the normal circumstances of life, under the regular situations, that's the true person, because everything else is fake. Everything else, people are acting. People are trying to get kavod, people are trying to get a name for themselves. But in the normal things of life, that's already where you have a good indication or a good litmus test, I should say, where you're able to define who the person is. Now watch this. In the story of purchasing the plot, the Ramban says, they had a custom over there. Unless you come from the city, we can't sell you a plot. You have to be a resident of the area to get a private plot. They had a minhag like this. I guess there was overcrowding, so they couldn't sell everybody a private plot. So you had to show them your citizen card. If you come from the zip code, we give you a plot. If not, you're buried in the general cemetery. That's what Ramban says. Avraham Avinu now comes along. He's an outsider. They tell him, listen, we can't give you your own plot. That's the law of the land. Now Avraham Avinu follows the law. Halakha says, Dina de Malchuta, Dina. The law of the land is the law. Which means, just like we're bound by Torah law, we're also bound by the laws of the country that we live in. If they make a certain law that says this is forbidden or this is illegal, as citizens of a certain country, you're bound to follow, so long as those laws don't go against the Torah law. In this case over here now, they come and tell them, listen, this is, they take out the constitution, they show them, listen, this is the thing, I'm sorry, Avraham, we'd love to sell it to you, but you know, you don't come from here, we can't sell you a private land. So what does Avraham Avinu do? He says, how about this? Sell me not only the Me'ara, but sell me the field around it. If you look in the Torah, it says, Avraham Avinu did not only buy the Me'ara to Machpila. He bought the Me'ara and the Sedeh. There was a field around it. Who asked for the field? It is a field. So Avraham Avinu found a legal loophole. He said, listen, am I allowed to buy a field? Yeah, you can buy a field as much as you want. Can I buy 2 acres of field? Yeah, the Me'ara's in the middle. Yes, let the Me'ara be in the middle. I'm buying a field. Okay, we can sell you a field. Now let's say after I buy a field, so on the purchase, on the title it says, man came, called Avraham, bought a field for agriculture, for farming. Anything wrong with it? No. Once I buy the field, who owns it? You own it. Once I buy, can I do whatever I want with it? Yeah. According to the law, you can't buy it for burial. If you're buying it for another purpose, then you want to use it for burial after, mutar. Why am I saying Avraham went through this whole... Does Avraham have the head to go through this now? His wife is in front of him. He has all this anxiety. And what is he doing? He's figuring out a way that the dinah de malchuta dinah will be absolved. Where he won't have a problem with doing something that's illegal. Another person would say, do me a favor. If it was a Syrian guy, he'd bring the governor with him and the mayor. He'd start bringing the guy from the House of Representatives, all the political people, all the things. Let's do the guy a favor. We'll sign the document a little differently. Just give the guy the field. We'll close our eyes to it. Avraham Avinu says, nothing doing. I'm honest yesterday and I'm honest tomorrow. I'm honest today also. The fact that I'm under pressure because of this, I'm not going to compromise my values. Again, you see the greatness of Avraham Avinu. I mean, he was a stickler to the truth. But the Torah doesn't tell us one thing in this parasha. It doesn't tell us the eulogy that he made. It says, Vayavo Avraham l'spod l'sarah. I'd love to see a copy of that speech. You can imagine what a moving speech it would be. Avraham Avinu eulogizing his wife, the tzaddeket. What did he say? We have no idea. But we could assume something. Sarah Imenu's name was Sarah. What does Sarah mean? Sarah means a princess. But why do they call a princess Sarah, or a general, or an officer, Sar? Sar is somebody that controls. Somebody that dominates. Originally, she was called Sarai. Sarai means she was in control of herself. Sarah, now she became control of the world. What does it mean she became control of the world? Sarah was a monarch? She was a king, a queen? What do you mean she became control of the world? Sarah had a tent. She lived very, very tzanuah. She lived very modestly. And they give us such a big name, Sarah, the one that controlled the world. She controlled the world. So the explanation is like this. If you think of the life of Sarah Imenu, ladies, she did not have an easy life at all. Just think of a lady that all she wants in her life is to have children. And she goes 90 years without having a child. Ladies can't go 1 year without a child. 2 years already, it's unbearable. And the ladies at Bar Minan, they go 5 years, 10 years, that's all they think about. That's all that's on their mind. Their eyes become bloodshot from the tears, and all they do is have Tehillim book, and Tefillah, that's all. There's only one thing that goes in their mind all day long. Nothing else means anything in the world. They want a child. Sarah lived like that for 90 years. Could you imagine the tzad, and she was praying, and that's all she wanted. To the extent, she did something that's unbelievable. She told Abraham to take a second wife. You tell me that that's not a big nisayon for a lady? It wasn't Abraham's idea. It's not that Abraham came to Sarah and said, listen, we can't have children, maybe I'm going to take another. Sarah said, Hine shifhati, go take my shifha and marry her, maybe you'll have children for her. The Gemara says that was one of the most difficult things for Sarah to endure. Because it's the nature to be jealous, to bring a second wife, to share your husband. Furthermore, Sarah was kidnapped in her life twice. She was kidnapped by Paro. She was kidnapped by Avimelech. There's no question. If you look at the trials and the tribulations of Sarah Imenu, she definitely had a lot of troubles in her life. But what? Who controlled who? Her name is Sarah. She controlled the world. Meaning no matter what happened, she was in control. No matter what life brought her, she did not lose her composure. She did not lose her tziniut when she was in the house of Paro. She did not lose her tziniut in the house of Avimelech. She did not lose her faith for 90 years not having a child. She had to make a decision to throw out Yishmael. She did not lose her trust. Sarah Imenu's greatness was she did not get affected. Hence she was Sarah. She controlled the world and the world did not control her. And that's an important lesson. And that's probably what the eulogy was. Vayavo Avraham lespod lesarah. That was his eulogy. She is Sarah.
And that's why Avraham Avinu said, how then at this point can I let the situation control me? If I'm burying Sarah, and her whole life was to overcome the difficulties, to act decently under all situations, where did Avraham get the strength? The strength was from Sarah. When he looked at Sarah in front of her, she said, out of respect to Sarah, this is what she would have done. This is what if she had, the way she would have acted. She never let the situation get to her, or change her, or affect her, or more importantly, compromise her. And therefore, after it says, Vayibo Avram lispod lesarah, then he says, I have to keep my composure as well. And therefore, he made sure he does everything honestly. No gold. I don't want Avodah Zarah. Give me the field also. I want to keep Dinah de Malchuta Dinah. I want to keep the law of the land as well. Vayishtahu. I have no questions on you, God. I thank you. I bless you. Everything you're doing is fine. I have zero questions. And the greatness was, he didn't even know at the time that he was doing anything that special. He just thought it was just another situation of everyday living. And that's the lesson I tell you today, ladies. Most of the things in your life that you're going to do is not going to be fireworks. Fireworks in this country, they do once a year. 4th of July, finished. The only fireworks we have every day in the street is street lights. Street lights are boring. What are they? They turn green, yellow. Nobody ever gets excited from a street light. But ask yourself, what's more important, fireworks or a street light? Street light. Without street lights, but then you have accidents, you have people getting hurt. That's the same thing in life. People sometimes, they only want greatness. They want to be heroes. They want to be written in the papers. They want to hear their name from the pulpit. They went, they built, they did, they accomplished. They're only interested in doing the Akedat Yitzhak. But ladies, most of life is not Akedat Yitzhak. And once in a while, you have a chance to become great or do something fantastic or something very special. But most of life is every day, the normal things. When you get up in the morning and you make breakfast for your children, that's as big as of a nisayon as Akedat Yitzhak and Abraham burying his wife. Because imagine God would tell you in the morning, make breakfast for your child. And you say, oh, this is big nisayon. You'd go put on a wedding gown and you'd come downstairs and you'd make the eggs 3 times until it was perfect because this Borei Olam gave you a nisayon. But just because he didn't tell it to you, this is chesed nonetheless. It's in the Torah. The Torah says when you're feeding your children, it's chesed. When you're catering to your husbands, that's a mitzvah. Even though you weren't specifically told, and even though the news is not going to talk about it. The news will talk about somebody landed on the moon, somebody made open heart surgery, somebody discovered a new discovery in science. Nobody's going to say, a lady drove their children to school and picked them up in the afternoon. Big deal, what do you mean? This is every day. But that's where you're tested. That's where your greatness is. And if you look throughout history, our forefathers were always tested in the small things. David HaMelech, what made him great? God noticed him, how he took care of the sheep. David was a shepherd. One day, David HaMelech, he decides, there's different sheep. There's the young ones, there's the old ones, and then there's the middle ones. So David HaMelech says, like, we have to split them into 3 groups. First, I'm going to take the young ones. They can eat first, because they can only eat the soft grass. So let them go first. He separates them. You know how difficult it is to separate the sheep? After he finishes with them, he takes out the next group, the older ones. And they can eat the next level. And then lastly, he brings out the middle guys. They can eat anything. God says, look how careful he is with sheep. Look at this. He's worried about the sheep. How much he eats. What can he eat? Soft, hard, not... He says, if he's so worried about sheep, he's the one that can be worried about my people as well. So you see, it doesn't start with, your greatness starts on the varim ketanim, on the everyday things of life. And you have to keep that in mind. There was one time a rabbi walking, he passed a restaurant. So he told the student, psh, this is an unbelievable institution of chesed. The student said, chesed? It's a restaurant. He says, you know how many meals this guy serves a day? This guy must feed thousands of people a day. It was a busy restaurant. So the
student says, what do you mean, chesed? The guy, he charges. He says, what do you mean, he has to charge? He says, he has to take the money so he can buy the food. Where's he going to get the food from? Doesn't need money? He says, yeah, but hacham, he charges more than the food costs. He says, of course, it costs him money for the gas to make it, for the fire. But hacham, he charges even more for that. He says, because he has the waiters. Don't the waiters have to serve him? They should get their food themselves. To do the chesed, he has to charge money so he can do more chesed. But hacham, he charges even more for himself. Meaning, if he pays the waiters and the plates and all that, he still charges enough money to put in his pocket. How could you call that chesed? He says, what do you mean? He has to eat also. If he doesn't eat, how can he do chesed tomorrow? He's going to starve to death and there's no more chesed. So he's allowed to eat also. He's allowed to make some money. So you see over here, when the rabbi saw a restaurant, they were trying to tell the guy, if you have this kavana, if you have this in mind, this is a great, every person you serve and put a bill, you're fulfilling a mitzvah, you're doing the greatest thing. That's our religion. Even things that are seemingly menial. The Chafetz Chaim once went to a pharmacist in the town in Radin in Poland. There was a pharmacist. He was a Jew, but he was secular. He had no vestige of religion. The Chafetz Chaim went in there, and out of nowhere, he goes behind the counter, he starts hugging him. Ashrecha, Ashrecha, you're so lucky, you're so fortunate. And the guy is amazed. He says, the Chafetz Chaim must not know who I am. He doesn't believe in God, this guy. The Chafetz Chaim, Ashrecha, you're so lucky. So the guy says, what Ashrei? What did I do, Hakam? He says, look how many people's lives you've saved over the years. Every day somebody comes in, they give a prescription, you give them medicine. This one over here had a headache, this one over here had a stomach ache, this one over here had something in his leg, this one had something in his ears. Every day you're helping hundreds of people, taking away their pain. Chafetz Chaim says, I don't know if I have that zechut, that I'm able to help so much people. So when the guy heard this, the guy started to understand, I never thought of it that way. So the students told the Chafetz Chaim the same things. What are you talking about? Every prescription he takes, he takes money also. He has them for insurance. He has them for copay. He has these bills. Of course, he needs money to buy more medicine. But he's taking more than that. He needs money to live himself. If he's not here tomorrow morning, the pharmacy's closed. Then nobody's able to get medicine. Then everybody suffers. So therefore, the Chafetz Chaim is trying to say, even a simple act, like doing something even you're getting paid for. A babysitter goes to somebody's house, babysits children for 3 hours, the parents come home, they give the child $25. The lady did the biggest chesed. You took care of somebody's children to make somebody else have shalom bayit, they can go out, spend time. That's a mitzvah. And those mitzvot are great. It doesn't only have to be, you built an institution, you went, you saved somebody's life. Those things are also great, but that doesn't happen every day. The things I'm telling you happen on a daily basis. When you're walking to make the Tilat Yadayim in Seudah Shlishit, and there's a line over here, and you don't push, and you don't scooch, and you don't take somebody's spot or somebody's seat, that already is where God tests you, in the small things. Because if you're worried about the small things, then for sure you'll be worried about the big things. But unfortunately, most people say, that's nothing. When it comes to the big item that everybody will talk about, then already I'll be careful. And that's what made this test great. Avraham Avinu didn't know he was being videoed. On this, he didn't think we'd still be talking about it. He knew we would be talking about the Akedah, but he didn't think that this was going to make the class. And that's why it was so significant. And that's why Rivka, her act was so insignificant, because she didn't know she was being watched. She just was being natural. And that was the true midah. When Eliezer saw that, he says, yes, this fits in with Sarah and Abraham. Sarah was the controller of the world. Never let the situation change your equilibrium, or change your attitude, or your dealings. We must transact and deal straight under every situation. And then already we could say we are true descendants of Abraham and Yitzhak. And Amen.